time. Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Harahawk. I'm Sean Cantwell, and, well, I'm not quite sure if this is really kind of how we wanted to lead off things here, but I had fully planned on yesterday, quite frankly, the Wings dropping their game to the Islanders, and that we'd be starting the show talking about when is too soon to fire Derek Lalonde, but I guess he's kind of may have saved himself for now, for the moment.
There's nothing in the front office that's saying they're even looking at getting rid of Derek Lalonde, but as the fan base, we're saying it's time. Yes, they won. They were able to score a second goal with 40 seconds left on the clock or something like that. Lucas Raymond, I believe. And they pulled out a win against the Islanders, which is good. A win is a win. It really is. But, I mean, it's against the Islanders. I mean, had they been able to, like, completely dominate, say, a Florida Panther team or Vegas Golden Knights team, then we have a conversation.
It might have meant something.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a win. Looks the same in the win column. But it's you outshot them. You won 2-1. Good deal. But it's not exactly something that would be like, oh, okay, we were all wrong about Derek Lalonde. Because the team still looked off. Like, he's not working this team at all. He's got a high caliber talent on this squad. And you know, that lineup for the opening faceoff, Michael Rasmussen slips on the ice, falls, and we're like, oh, here we go. And Andrew Kopp gets tossed out of the faceoff circle on the opening faceoff.
Lovely.
That was a harbinger of things to come. They were down 1-0 until the third. And then I think it was Johnny Bergers. Bergeron, he fires one, ties it up, and then Lucas Raymond with the tiebreaker with mere seconds left to go in the game, so good for him. But there's still a lot of questions. The team just seems to be real lackluster. Like, they're not amped up, and I think that lies on the head coach.
So this weekend, they go in to play Boston, who, as you'll recall, just fired their head coach a couple days ago.
Yep.
So they're kind of a team, I don't want to say in free fall necessarily, but they are seemingly adrift at the very least at this point in time.
They are not the Boston Bees of a couple seasons ago, but they're still a team that will readily hand the Wings their next L. I mean, it's in the cards.
And that would make it now, at that point, that would be six of your last eight. How bad of a skid do you think it would have to get for Stevie to be forced to pull the plug?
I don't know. I mean, he's never been in this position as GM. I mean, he and John Cooper were joined at the hip his entire tenure at, or was he? Correct me. Was John Cooper the head coach of the Lightning that entire time, or was he having to deal with John Tortorella? No, Tortorella was gone before
Stevie. It wouldn't have been Tortorella. So Cooper got brought on in 2012. He took over in the 2012 season from Boucher.
And okay, yeah, Stevie Y, he was GM in 2010? Question mark.
Yeah.
So. So he has seen a coaching change. I mean, he has with the Wings as well. But
correct. Yeah, he brought on I think he took over when Boucher was still head coach, and then a couple years in gave him the boot, and that's when Cooper got brought in, and he's been the guy obviously ever since.
The Wings have just never been they're loyal to a fault to their past players, their coaches. Lalonde, if he's going to lose a job, probably won't lose it until the end of the season if they don't make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, I think the writing's on the wall and a change needs to be made.
I would agree with that, though I don't necessarily know if just missing the playoffs would be enough to get him canned. Like, I feel like you would have to be a pretty, like, you were not even in contention for the playoffs for, the like, the last month of the season for him to, I think, to for to come to terms on Lalonde and sack him. And my theory behind that is if he does undergo yet another coaching change here, okay, now you've brought another, a new coach in. Now at that point, after, like, the first... Like, you take over, whoever's the coach at the time, yeah, you're probably going to end up sacking him unless it's, like, somebody really, like, really high caliber. You made your first coaching change. All right. You're trying to change a culture, shake things up, whatever. After your second, and especially after your third, at that point, now people start to look up top. Start to look at the GM. Well, yeah. Changing coaches hasn't helped things. Maybe management is the problem.
And that could very well be.
And I don't think he's really wanting to put that much of a target on his back, though obviously it's Detroit, so we know it's never going to be quite as much as it would be
in New York, Toronto, Boston, kind of.
And because it is Steve Yzerman, and not even... I mean, obviously, because of the local hero thing, but also because of what he did with Tampa Bay.
Right.
This town is, like, double likely to give him the benefit of the doubt for as long as possible. But traditionally, after, like, your second coaching change, people start to look at, okay, why can't he get these coaching hires right? Maybe it's the players. Maybe it's the system. Maybe it's you.
Sure. You brought up a lot of great points. The fact, I mean, that Stevie Y had success as a GM. I think a lot of people who've been following this team and the league for the last 20 some odd years would realize that he's had success in Tampa. What is the big change in the Detroit Red Wings? Ownership. Here I am bagging on Chris Ilitch again, and I have no problem doing this.
You and me both.
We have seen a drastic change in the free agent, the money. In this team since Chris Ilitch took over for Mr. I, both in the Red Wings and the Tigers. That's why I try to tell people in the chat rooms and everything else, is like, look at what the Tigers are doing. It's almost carbon copy of each other. They don't want to spend money. They want to build through the draft.
It's the Spider-Man meme.
One's wearing blue and white, one's wearing red and white. We've got a lot of windows open on this computer. I'm in my mind. So I think if they lose miss out on the playoffs by a lot, like if we're talking 5 points or more, then yeah, definitely. But I mean, even if it was like last year where we miss the playoffs by 1 point, Yzerman will be able to look at the month of October and November and say, you know what? You can't win a Stanley Cup in October or November, but you can sure lose it. And this is where we had a problem. And a change might be made.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like it's time. Also, to the money thing, for what it's worth, you have the 9th most cap space in the NHL, but you know how much cap space you actually really have? 3.47 mil.
That's not much.
It's really not. So it's almost... I don't want to say it's a cop-out to blame the money as far as that goes, but you look at that where that money is allotted to certain guys. Like, you're paying 3.4 mil to Justin Hall. You're paying Jeff Petrie anything at all, and that's quite frankly unacceptable. You're paying Ben Chiarot 4.7 mil.
Yeah.
So you are burdened to an extent, and it's obviously why you weren't able to retain a lot of your key free agents, because you kind of put yourself in a position, and you were always going to have to commit like somewhere in the 8 to 8.5 mil range to keep Raymond and Sider here long term.
Yeah, that was on the wall. Yeah, you knew that was going
to
happen.
There was never really a way around that. And then you're, like I said, when you're handing out money like that to defensemen who aren't any good, and you're also committed to over 5 mil apiece to Kopp and Compher as well. So, I mean, there's an argument to be made that while I don't think the boss is going to open up the purse strings as much as I think any of us would like, but there is still, you're spending close-ish to the cap at least. Now, next season, when you have 20 mil in cap space to work with, and you've got Larkin, Sider, Raymond, DeBrincat all locked up, when you get to that point... then maybe it's fair to start kind of looking at some things and thinking, although you do have, again, Cop, Comfort, and Sherratt all locked up next year, too. But at least the whole contract comes off the books and probably a few other things as well. That's the point where I start to think, okay, now it's time to go after some free agents. You just didn't have the room to do it, and you don't have the guys to be able to clear that space off the books. So you do kind of run into that issue somewhat. But then that, to me, unfortunately, falls back on Yzerman just for the fact that, okay, you swung on these signings and missed like something crazy on several of them.
Yeah, there's some signings that he's done really well, but he couldn't retain them. Like David Perron, Shane Gothelsberger. But yet, Justin Hull is still hanging around. You still got Andrew Kopp with that. That was he did well in New York, but that has not translated. Jeff Petrie still is a head scratcher.
Yeah, Kopp has had his moments, but they've been very few and far between. Like I think his max and goals in the season for us has been 13 so far.
Yeah,
and that's the only time he's gotten into the double digits since he's been here. And well, he's on pace to do it this year. He should be on pace for at least as of right now, he's on pace for a 20 goal season. We'll see if that holds or what, but. Yeah, it really, at some point, you just kind of start to question the Yzer plan a little bit, and I know it's hard for a lot of people in this town to accept, but...
It is. It is.
And I feel like that's the only reason that Lalonde may get something of a stay of execution. We got to hit a break. Lots of stuff to do today. It is happy hour. Stick around. Back after this. So, obviously, last year, certainly, for the Detroit Tigers, exceeded expectations, I would say.
Yes. Very exciting to watch.
This is a team that was not in competition for anything by about the All-Star break and then somehow played their way into a playoff spot and won their first playoff series in over a decade.
Yeah.
To the shock of pretty much everybody in the state of Michigan, quite frankly. And it all got capped off with Tarik Skubal getting the unanimous vote for the Cy Young.
Unanimous. I mean, that's something to say right there.
Well, quite frankly, there wasn't anyone else who was a serious competitor for the throne. Seth Lugo, a guy who's got like an ERA like a full point higher than him. Emmanuel Clase, a closer, really? Like, the options just really didn't... There was no one else who made sense on the AL side of things.
Yeah, but those people in that selection committee, there's always one rogue guy out there, would want to pick some random pitcher and, hipster of the crew.
Yeah, there's always one of those, isn't there? But that said, this should set you up for an exciting offseason in which, okay, you now see you have a team that, weirdly enough, can make the playoffs despite a bunch of glaring flaws. So this is traditionally where a general manager would spend time going and addressing those flaws in free agency.
Yes.
Spend a little bit of money.
Absolutely.
And there are certainly some exciting options out there. But there was a poll the other day the Free Press did asking which of these free agent moves basically, what would you like most to see happen in the offseason? Threw things out there like, signing Alex Bregman, going to Toronto and trading for Vlad Guerrero Jr., things of that nature. Want to know what won out over both of those things and also everything else?
What?
Signing Justin Verlander.
Of course.
A full, 31% of the fan base that responded to this survey said that the free agency move they want most to happen is signing a 42-year-old Justin Verlander. And quite frankly, you see, this is why the Ilitches and Scott Harris and whoever can just get away with not making the moves that need to be made, just putting a substandard product out on the field. This is why. Because this fan base are a bunch of rubes who are so starved for nostalgia that they'd rather bring back a guy who is, at this point in his career, quite possibly washed up and, at any rate, 42 years old, than go out and sign a premium player at a premium position or go acquire someone who can actually hit and is still very much in the prime of their career.
Yep.
I don't understand you people. I really, truly don't.
Now, here is another reason why they went that route. And this is a problem for all of MLB. And my apologies to Major League Baseball fans, is that the popularity of the sport is not at its fullest. They're to the point where, Ohtani, Judge, maybe a couple players here and there, but that's it. They don't know the talent that's out there, and there is a lot of talent out there. Talent that's available,
but these are baseball fans voting on this poll, though.
No, this Detroit Free Press readers who are scrolling through. That's a name I recognize. I liked him back in 2012.
Like, people can't be this stupid, right? JV, for what it's worth, had a 5.48 ERA last season. Didn't even make the playoff roster. And people here want him back thinking he's going to be the second coming of Kenny Rogers, apparently.
Well, I mean, you touched on it. It's nostalgia. They just, oh, here's a name I recognize. It's the Ken Holland thing. Oh, here's a name I recognize, and he used to be good. Let's get him.
This is why you get taken advantage of by ownership. This is why owners feel like they don't have to make moves. All we have to do is sit back and trigger memories of the happy feels from back in the late 2000s and early 2010s.
Oh, yeah.
When this team was relevant, and that's enough for some people. Like, yep. They'll get them out. Like how they just, you saw with the Wings, they just signed Pavel Datsyuk to a one-day deal to retire him as a Red Wing because they know that there's nothing that's actually on the ice right now that is any kind of fun or enjoyable to watch. Like, I just see just a bunch of JV, like, commemorative days and bobbleheads and things of that nature in lieu of actually putting together a competent product on the field.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I will say this, though. I could accept JV coming back and, you know, playing the role of the gambler here, if that is coupled with other actual signings of consequence. Like, if you go out and get me Alex Bregman, then, okay, if JV comes along for the ride too, that's fine. Okay, I can live with that.
Yeah.
Because you actually went and shored up third base where you basically have a black hole at present. Or you go and trade for a Vlad Guerrero Jr., who you have... And it seems like that's one that should be at least somewhat more popular than it was, because we all remember Vlad Guerrero. Like, anyone who's like following baseball ever remembers him, and mostly remembers the fact that he swung like he was playing golf and somehow managed to get more hits and home runs than like anybody. Like, you, but to his kid here, you take a guy who's hitting .323 and slugging at a, you know, with an OPS of .940, who hit 30 bombs last season, you'd take that guy in the heart of your order all day long. I would love that. Nothing more than that. That, Bregman, whatever. Whoever you go and get, I would rather have than JV. Like, I'm okay with them coming back if it's on a cheap deal and you actually make other moves. But if JV is the move this offseason, I'm not going to be happy.
No.
It can't be. That can't be the only thing you go out and do.
No. And, I mean, the owners are like, hey, this is going to get meat in the seats, and we don't have to spend money on other talent. This is great. Chris Illich would be like, okay, perfect. I'm showing a profit. Let's do this.
And we end up basically being doomed to another decade of irrelevance.
We saw it with the Lions before the current ownership. May she have a great day each and every day she walks this earth. but, I mean, before then, it was, you know, William Clay Ford, rest in peace. It was, why do I need to spend a whole lot of money on players? You guys are coming out to every game. The TV revenue's there. I don't need to spend money on this product because you're going to be there anyway.
Well, in that case, also, they weren't coming out to the games because, you'll remember, they'd get blacked out.
That was during, like, I think it was like the 0-16, the following season after 0-16. Yeah, they had some blackouts, but...
Oh, I remember a bit during the 90s, too. Like, if they didn't have a sellout at the Silver Dome, then you wouldn't see the game on TV. Like, that was the thing for a while there. And that was when the Lions were occasionally, you know, showing signs of life at times in the 90s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but also, in that case, you're talking 8 games a season. Of course, you're going to, like, it's really an accomplishment to not sell out a game when you only have eight home games.
Yep.
Versus, you know, 82 for the Tigers. Like, there, and I truly do believe that you could pack Comerica Park like you did back then if you just put a little bit of money into improving the roster.
Yep.
Like, yeah, sure, you can do the easy thing here and then have the, you know, have JV bobblehead day, JV, hey, remember the no-hitter, whatever night. All that stuff. You could do that, but then you're going to have nobody out there the rest of the season. Like, like we saw it here, like, you could get tickets for like $5 for that last series of the season, like a month before that the Chicago series that closed out the year. You couldn't get into that stadium for under $60 by that weekend. Like that, the Saturday after they clinched, like getting tickets all of a sudden became rather hard to do.
Yep.
Like that Friday, like I don't think you could get into the stadium for under $100 if you went on a resale site of some sort.
Well, let me ask you an honest question. This is not rhetorical. I mean, do you think ownership? I'm not even just nailing on just Chris Illich. Any ownership, when they see that, do you think, oh, I can make more money if I sink in more money, or is it going to be, oh, they're going to come back next season regardless of what I put on the field?
I do feel like it's more the latter, honestly. And that's honestly a problem around MLB, why you see so many teams. And it seems like it's more teams in MLB than it is in a lot of your other sports that just choose to be non-competitive. That we're not going to invest anything into anything. We're not going to try. And if anyone has a problem with that, well, I guess it kind of sucks to be them.
Yep.
Like, I do kind of feel like there is, and we see it with certain teams in the NL Central, looking at you, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, that just kind of, they don't try because they don't have to. And it's kind of sad that that's a thing. But unfortunately, it's exactly where we find ourselves. We got to hit a break. It is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. It is Happy Hour, and it's about time for another issue of our time that I'd like to present you with, Adam.
Sure. Bring it on.
So, I'm not sure if you've heard about any of this stuff. Of course, Paul Skeens, he just won the NL Rookie of the Year, pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates, who a lot of people thought should have been in contention for a Cy Young Award. So, there is this card, his rookie card, in the latest Topps Chrome update set, a 1-of-1 pro debut patch card, which he actually has autographed, that the Pirates apparently really, really want to bring into their possession as a team.
The whole organization.
Yeah, like the team itself wants this card in the worst way, I guess.
Okay.
For some reason. I don't know why, but it's a thing.
A museum or something like that, I guess.
I guess. So they said last week they'd love to bring this card back home to PNC Park to share with all Buccos fans. And they are offering quite the laundry list of prizes and whatnot in exchange for the card.
None of it being money.
Of course not money. What kind of ridiculousness is that? Offering money for something.
Can we pause for a second? Bucco fan? Is that what they call their fans?
Yeah, well, that's what they call their team. That's their team nickname, I guess.
The Buccos? Okay.
Anyway, don't question it. It's Pittsburgh, man.
All right. Please continue.
The more you try to understand it, the less that you're going to succeed at doing so.
Yeah.
So here's what they're offering up in exchange for this card. Again, money.
Money.
A pair of season tickets behind home plate for the next 30 years.
Wow.
A softball game for you and 29 of your closest friends at PNC Park, along with Pirates alumni to act as coaches.
Like a baseball card fan has 29 friends.
True.
Sorry. Put baseball card fans on the apology list, please.
A private tour at Pirate Spring Training next year, and a chance to take batting practice and warm up with the team.
Not without my inhaler.
And a meet and greet with Paul Skeens himself, 2 autographed jerseys, plus other unique experiences yet to be determined. If you're looking for a monetary value of the tickets, by the way, a Pirates rep told Baseball America that a pair of season tickets behind home plate for the 2025 season cost approximately $8,000.
Well, I mean, if they're transferable tickets, like, you know, he could sell these per game. He can make that. He can make money off of that. He could sell the jerseys. There's a lot of things he can do. I mean, do you think this cat is going to be a household name, say, like in 10 years?
He certainly has the ability to do so. Like, the way he pitched this season like I said, obviously they ended up shutting him down early due to the fact that, you know, he's a rookie. You don't want to overwork the arm, and his team's also not good. I can Like, the Pirates are trash and have been basically since Jim Leland and, you know, Barry Bonds left town, man. Like, it is what it is. Like, they have started.
Change your hats. They look stupid.
Like, you just haven't been a good team in literally 30 years, and you just kind of accept it. But Skeens last year, sub 2 ERA, ERA of 1.96,
wow,
which is very good.
Yeah.
And how many guys did he strike out on the year? 170, like, in what ended up being 133 innings of ball that he pitched this year. Like, that's all really, really good, and he could very well be a perennial Cy Young contender. I think he could even win it next year for the NL, quite frankly, if he keeps up like this. I mean, this is a hard thing to maintain, but, you know, he is that good, so I feel like there's always the possibility that it could increase in value of anything, but I guess the issue here is, I forgot, there's one more part of that, one more additional thing that was offered.
Okay.
So, Skeens is also dating one Livy Dunn, college gymnast, viral Instagram and social media personality, and all-around smoke show.
One night alone with some indecent proposal kind of thing.
So not quite that, but
I'm still going to need my inhaler.
She is offering that you can spend one game, you know, one Pirates game with her in her luxury suite there at PNC Park. Now, obviously,
she have seats behind home plate.
Now, I don't know if that means that any of her hot gymnast friends would be coming along, you know, possibly single gymnast friends, because obviously she's kind of taken by the guy whose card she's trying to help the organization get back.
Here's a beautiful little twist. The owner of the card is actually like, you know, a model in his own right. Amber Crombie and Finch kind of guy. And he's just beautiful human being.
And just steals Livy Dunn away from Paul Skeens.
And then he has to look at him at home, behind home plate for the next 30 years.
Hope it was worth it to get that card back, bud.
Whoa, he's really pitching at that guy in behind home plate. And ball 5, ball 10, ball 20. So that would be funny, but I've met a lot of baseball card collectors, and they don't look like Adonis kind of people. So I don't think that's
not so much.
No, not so much. Usually, collectors of anything really are not.
They're all a bunch of nerds.
Is Tim from Plastic Planet listening? I hope he's not. Doesn't have his radio on. I mean, they're just not. They're kind of homebodies. They're really into their collecting, and so the whole thing about running out the field for a softball game, I mean, first of all, I don't know if I'd be able to pull together, you know, 20 friends or whatever.
I feel like I could find 29 people who would participate in such a thing. You wouldn't be one of them because you'd need your inhaler, obviously.
I don't need an inhaler, but I'd be
you would after playing a softball game with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh, it would be actually with the Pirates?
Yeah, like you'd actually be playing, I don't know, with or against members of the Pirates, and then be coached by Pirates alumni. I guess I didn't read that. Yeah, softball game for you and 29 of your closest friends with PNC Park, along with Pirates players and alumni to act as coaches.
Wow, that'd be kind of cool. I mean, I don't know. I mean, trying to put a dollar amount on it, I mean, tickets behind home plate for the next 30 years, if they're transferable,
you could make money off it, but remember, it's the Pittsburgh Pirates, so they probably won't be good anytime in that 30 years.
$100 a ticket.
Who's paying $100 a ticket to go see the Pirates, though?
I got the tickets from the guy that sold, that stupid guy that sold that card. I don't know. I mean, it's,
you mean at best you're probably getting a sandwich from Primanti Brothers in exchange for those tickets.
Yeah. I mean, if this pitcher does become a household name, and he's up there with the Mark McGuires and the Barry Bonds and Sosa's,
I think he
and
very
whatever.
Well could be.
I mean, then you have the
barring
jersey. You have the jerseys you can sell. You have the tickets. Yeah, I mean, there's things that you can do as opposed to taking a one lump sum of, oh, we'll give you $5,000 for it. I mean, you're
It'd be more than $5,000. Like, at this point, I've heard, and there have already been auction houses that have put it out publicly, like, we'll help you sell this card if it actually comes up to when someone finally actually finds
it. If Christie's is going to go ahead and put their hat in the ring, then sorry, Pirates, this card's going over here.
Well, yeah, because they're going to get seven figures for that thing, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, then yeah,
like that. That's what I'm saying. Like that, it's not necessarily.
And then he's going to turn around, buy season tickets.
Again, you can get the season. You probably get season tickets there for the cost of one from Andy's Brothers sandwich a day. You can sit behind home plate at the Pittsburgh Pirates game.
Directly across from the owner's box. There he is again. Not even watching the game. Look, is he playing Pokemon? he's watching Star Trek. Oh, my God. He's a millionaire, sir. I know. I'm waving. I don't know. If they can take it to an auction house and make really good money, yes, absolutely go that route. But I mean, at face value, that's kind of cool. Some of that stuff that they were offering was pretty cool.
I mean, sure. In theory, is it some cool stuff that they're offering up? Oh, without a doubt. But at the same point in time, you know you're going to be able to get more money for it and just have your family like set for life.
That is something to think about, you know.
Like, yeah,
you know, the guy's not married.
I can't feed my family with Pittsburgh Pirates tickets.
The guy's not married. You know he's not. But I mean, what is up with this card that makes it so valuable? Is it laced in cocaine? I mean, what is this?
So it's a one of one card with an actual, like, I think, patch that's like a, I don't know if it's a piece off a jersey or whatever, and autographed by Paul Skeen. So that's kind of a thing. Like, they have, I think, pieces of actual jersey in them. Like,
yeah, yeah. And they do that in all the sports. And I mean, I don't know why.
And it's also the fact that, like, all of a sudden, players have decided they want these cards for themselves. Or the teams want them. Like, there's so much interest in, like, these guys having their own memorabilia that it's kind of created this market for them because we as fans want nothing more than to extort money out of people who have more money than us.
O.J. Simpson went to jail for getting his own memorabilia. I don't know. I guess if I had it, I just don't know baseball enough. I don't know this cat enough to really know if he'd be like a well-known name to garner a seven-figure amount.
In the world of Major League Baseball at present, oh, he absolutely is.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, again, arguably already in his rookie year, like best pitcher in the MLB, other than maybe Chris Sale right now. And he's the thing is, he's probably still. He's very well known, you know, if you're even a casual baseball fan, you definitely know who his girlfriend is. Like, it's kind of where that lies, really. So someone is going to pay some stupid money for that thing, I guarantee it. And someone might even pay that stupid money to then claim all the things that that the Pirates are offering.
Yeah.
Someone will be desperate enough to want the season tickets to try and find 29 people that they would call friends to play a game of softball with them at PNC Park, and desperate enough to just be in the presence of Livy Dunn that they might actually pay that stupid money. Yep. just to turn this thing in.
I'll have to look her up. I've never heard of her before in my life.
You need to.
I'll do that in the next break. Yeah.
I would recommend. I'm actually surprised that you haven't. But I don't know. For me, like my advice, such as it is, you never take the first thing that the team offers you. Like when you get some like rare piece of memorabilia or like catch like an important milestone home run ball.
Yep.
You never ever take what the team wants to offer you because they're always going to try to lowball you. They're in the business of they're in the business of making money. They are also very much not in the business of paying full price for things when you know you can go on the resale market and sell that ball for like probably four times or more the package that's being offered. I mean, you remember the guy who caught the Shohei Ohtani home run this year?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think they were offering him, like, here's a couple, we'll offer you a couple autographed jerseys, maybe an autographed ball or something. You don't even get to meet him. Like, there was a, what was it? The Mark McGwire, when he was during the home run wars with him and Sosa, like, someone caught, I think, the ball that took the lead in that race, and they offered this guy, here's jerseys, maybe a ticket or two, a ball. I just want to meet Mark McGwire. Nope, not happening. He won't do it. All right, then I guess I'm selling the ball.
Well, this is my ball now.
Because he ended up pocketing like a couple mil out of that.
Nice.
Smart dude, quite honestly. Like, I am fully in support of people who happen to be in that situation going and getting theirs. Absolutely.
Yep.
You make that money, you set your family up for life, and you can buy yourself all the season tickets your heart desires. And besides, who wants to sit behind home plate anyway? Like, you don't really get that good of a view of the action.
You're on camera.
You're on camera the entire time, and quite frankly, who wants that?
Right.
When I'm being a drunken lout at a baseball stadium, you think what I'm going for is to be on camera the entire time? No! I don't want to be on camera, in a broadcasting capacity, much less that.
I would do it and then sell the seats to Captain Morgan Corporation, where they just at a Pirates game, the captain would he please sit down? No, he's the captain. Shut up.
He can't sit down. That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. But there's that. That's my advice. Hold out for as much as you can get out of whoever. Even if you get a decent offer, there's money to be made elsewhere.
Yes.
Every time. We got to hit a break. It's happy hour at Solid State Radio. I promise I am not trying to avoid talking about the Lions this afternoon. There really isn't much to do with them. I mean, they're playing the Colts this weekend in Indy. The Colts aren't good. Anthony Richardson looked decent last week when he came back after he got benched for basically literally quitting on his team. I can't be bothered with this game this week. I mean, I'm going to watch the game. Don't get me wrong.
We'll do the picks.
But it's not like there's a whole lot to talk about with the game just because, the Lions are favored to win by 7. Of course they are. Indy's not good. And am I supposed to expect them to mount a challenge to the Lions? I don't. Sorry. So instead, we do our favorite bit that we do on this show.
Yay!
Sean and Adam's Unsolicited Advice, where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on, we intercept, and I think we do a better job of this than the people who get paid to do this crap for a living. We ruin a few lives in the process, but, that's the price of doing business.
It's a pick six of anguish.
Truly it is. Let's dive into this thing, shall we? Dear somebody who cares, I finally decided to go back to school and finish my degree. Most of my coursework is online, but my boyfriend's social life is getting in the way. We share a studio, and our apartment complex has great athletic accommodations, including a pool and hot tubs. A lot of our social circle still lives with family or a lot of roommates thanks to the housing crunch, so they all want to come over. And they do so all the time. Even with noise-canceling headphones, it's a headache to study in a small space with so many people. My boyfriend complains when I complain about getting my study time turned into social time. He says I could just go to a coffee shop or the library. I point out that he and his friends could just go to a bar or club. It helps to be in my environment where I can make myself a cup of tea and let our cat curl up in my lap when I study. I have an introvert at heart, and while I love my boyfriend, his need to be the social butterfly every weekend is taking its toll. I only have a year and a half left to go, and most of the classes are difficult. It really hurts that he supports my efforts verbally, but not with his actions. No matter how I describe the effect having so many people coming in and out of our space has on me, it doesn't compute. A movie is a movie, and there's no difference between him watching one alone and bringing over three other people to watch it. What do I do here? Signed, Rachel Eckert.
I was like, whoa, this is hitting a little close to home for you, isn't it, Shawster?
Perhaps a bit.
I mean, well, she brings up a lot of good points, but I'm kind of wondering if we're only getting her side. I'm wondering if it's, is it every week or is it, they're watching movies and not really doing much? I mean, is this all of a sudden Animal House each and every week?
Right. That it doesn't really go into a great amount of detail there, honestly.
And it sounds like it's just on the weekends, or is it like throughout the week as well?
Doesn't really say. Like, I don't know how many times. Like, all she says is, all the time. Like, I don't know how often that they're over. It just says every weekend. So it's not like during the week.
So, I mean, if he loves her and supports her the way he claims to, and she loves him and supports him the way she does, it's time for a compromise. Say, okay, you can have friends over just on Saturdays. That gives her 6 other days for studying, and then like one day to study with, you know, restraints, I guess. But if, I mean, if it's one of those things where, you know, he's showing up with friends 6 days a week and they're not leaving till 4, I think she's got much bigger problem than the fact that she can't study.
I don't see the issue here.
She's running an opium den. And I didn't notice it because I was just studying astronomy. So, I mean, I think it's time for a compromise. She shouldn't really have to explain too much to her guy because he should already know. So maybe every other weekend, maybe every Saturday, but, you know, put some parameters on it. Make sure everybody's out by midnight. You know, that gives her ample time to study the other 6 days and working within the parameters on Saturday. So because she's got to remember it's his place too.
That seems fair, but and for what it's worth, being a studio apartment, so like there's like space is not exactly
there is no separate bedroom,
right?
There's the only separate room is the bathroom. I hope,
God, you would hope so.
Yeah.
So I could see how that would certainly be a little bit difficult, but yeah, like realistically, that's all you can do because it's not like in my case where I have a whole separate outbuilding that I can go and, you know, party it up in.
Yeah, right.
Like. That's the nice, you know, luxury of our little humble abode. But you know, she's not quite so lucky in that department. So yeah, you, kind of like you're just gonna have to, you two are have to figure out a way to work it out. Like you guys are gonna have to go out to the club tonight, go out to the bar, and then you know sometimes you're just gonna have to go to your whatever hipster coffee house is nearby and do your study in there.
Yeah, there you go.
There's just, you know, some level of it can't all be like, it's got to be Party Central 24/7 or it's got to be like, quite, you know, library study hour all the time.
Right.
Like there just isn't a...
It's time for a compromise and they need to come up with a rational solution for both.
Whatever that looks like, I guess that's up to the two of you to decide. Let's do another one of these, shall we? Dear, oh God, not these two idiots again.
Yep, it's us.
My husband got downsized at work just as I got an offer of a better paying but much more travel-oriented position. It required some shuffling of our budget, like getting rid of our daily dog walker and house cleaner, but we could make it on just one income. My husband hated his job and wanted to see if he could turn his passion into a serious career. I encouraged him. 9 months later, I regret it. The house is a mess. The dogs have torn up the backyard. My husband spends all his free time gaming in his sweatpants and has given up shaving. Our sex life is nil. He gets defensive when I ask him about what he does all day or doesn't. He says I treat him like a servant, and I say he's treating me like his mother. It's ridiculous that I'll be gone for 3 days and come home to the same dishes in the sink and the same lone sock on the floor. He swears he will try harder and then make an effort for a few days, but we eventually fall back into the same pattern. We had a relative of his coming to stay when I needed to make an unexpected trip. My husband promised me he would change the linens in the guest room and put clean sheets on the bed. I left a dish towel in between the sheets as a test to see if he'd keep his word. I came home from a grueling drive to find no dinner and the towel still there where I left it. We had a huge fight and I went and stayed in a hotel for a few days. My husband is furious with me and claims I humiliated him when his relative showed up and I wasn't there. I told him we couldn't keep going like this, but he keeps refusing to see a counselor with me. I am at the end of my rope here. Help. My God, Rachel apparently sending 2 for 2 with the advice this week.
Wow, she's...
I'm really in for quite something when I get home tonight, aren't I?
Oh, Adam and I had a great time on Friday doing unsolicited advice. She says, I'm going to fix your red wagon. So, I don't know. I mean, there's not... He's not leaving her with a whole lot of options. I think... and I've been going into this well quite often, but I'm wondering if maybe he quit his job to obtain some sort of goal and that goal hasn't happened. Maybe depression has kind of hit him to where it's not panning out to how he wanted. So he is medicating himself, not with drugs or alcohol, but with, you know, gaming and sloughing off and of that nature. I mean, and he's refusing to go to counseling. That's a big red flag right there. I mean, I think her only option is to try to get him to,
look at
First, I'm thinking talk to a doctor about doing something about his mood, maybe some vitamins, doing something about his. It sounds like he's depressed. It sounds like he is in a low point where he has no sexual confidence. He doesn't want to do. Cleanliness is out the window. Simple hygiene is out the window. It sounds like he's got something going on with him that he needs to address. I think if she is able to get him, not force him, but get him to address these issues, they might have a shot. But I think that's their only shot.
Probably. Otherwise, leave him, I guess. Yeah, you'll note that, by the way, it doesn't say anywhere in the letter, like, he's leaving to turn his passion into a career. At no point does it say, not even necessarily what the career is, but does she make any note of what has happened with said career? Like, is he actually bringing in money, or did he just say, basically, screw this, and, like, I'm just going to play video games all day? Or is he, like, trying to pursue his video gaming as a career? Like, I'm really kind of confused as to that component of it, because I feel like that would...
That'd be a big piece of the information right there. But it sounds like she's the writer is saying he's playing video games all day, which if his passion was video games or, you know, having some sort of Rocket Ball League or whatever that's called.
Right. Well, I know Rocket people League, thought they were going to make a career off of that nonsense.
I mean, if that was part of it, then I don't think she would have included that in the letter. Because it's not, if he was going to try to make it big in music, she wouldn't say, oh, and he just sits around playing his guitar all day. So I don't think the video games has anything to do with it. He's probably writing a novel, starting a wedding planner or, you know, anything like something like that.
Right.
It sounds like he hasn't reached any kind of goal that he set for himself. He feels depressed. He feels defeated, and he's running away from it. He's I'm not going to try to write. I'm not going to try to do this. I'm just going to go ahead and play Halo or Red Dead Redemption or whatever, and hide away from everything. You know, I don't feel confident as a man, so the romance part of it, that's gone, and I just don't really feel like. Shaving. I don't feel, it sounds like he's got a defeatist kind of attitude, and he needs to address that before, forget about the marriage. He's got to take care of himself.
Yeah. I mean, clearly there's something that ain't quite right here. Cause it seems odd that all of a sudden he also went from, he's pursuing this whatever other passion, career, whatever, to all of a sudden he doesn't do anything around the house at all anymore. Like,
right.
Seemed like almost like two separate things to an extent. Mm-hmm. Or was she assuming that he was just going to be a stay-at-home husband and do all the cooking and cleaning and whatnot?
Well, it sounds like whether he was working or stayed at home, I think there's certain things that, especially she says she's gone for her job for 3 days, comes back and the dishes aren't done. Come on, man. Even if he had worked, he should be doing the dishes while cleaning up after himself. At the very least, cleaning up after himself.
Right? Yeah, that part's ridiculous.
For those 3 days. But no, yeah, I think she hit the nail on the head that she has become his mother. And I can't remember what he accused her of, but, it's not good.
Why are you trying to kill my dreams?
They're trying to kill my dreams. Hang on a second. I got to pause my game to talk to you. Oh, this is terrible. I got to watch The Masked Singer here in a little bit. she's getting an unfair shake in this whole plan. He's not fulfilling his end of this bargain. I'm going to stop my job to do this. Sounds like this hasn't happened. And it sounds like he is... first of all, how rich are they? We're like, oh, we had to fire the dog walker.
Yeah, they barely had that kind of money. They had dog walker money.
Yeah, and we had to fire the house keeper and everything else. And so
we had to let our maid go. Like that's insane in itself to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I just think he needs to save his marriage. He needs to work on himself because. He sounds like he's become quite a load.
It would appear that way. Because this isn't going to last very long the way it's headed, that's for sure. Let's do one more.
Sure.
Shall we? Dear God, I hope this doesn't make it to Sean and Adam.
Uh-oh.
I've been in a relationship for 4 years. He's a great guy, but we both entered this relationship having children. He has a daughter. I have a son. They're the same age. My partner's really
they're
nice.
They're now dating. Sorry.
Yeah, see, it happened, man. My partner's really nice, but I feel like there's a double standard for discipline and work in the house. Mm-hmm. I closely monitor my son's screen time and make sure he's on top of everything. My foot's up as you know what all the time. My partner lets his daughter get away with everything, and my son often takes care of stuff she doesn't do, taking care of the dishes, for instance. My problem isn't with my stepdaughter. Most of the time, she's a decent kid. But every time I bring my partner's lack of discipline up, he thinks I hate her. Because of his sensitivity, I don't feel like I can discipline her myself. How do I talk to him about correcting this without making it sound like I hate his kid?
I don't know how he does, how she does, because it doesn't sound like, I mean, I'd have to know all the other context of this situation. Is, you know, is he's your lazy, good for nothing, trashy daughter is not doing this. How is she approaching him about this? So, you know, we really need to be in lockstep as far as how we treat the kids. We need to be, because the son's got to be like, wait a minute. You're cutting my screen time. Meanwhile, my stepsister, she's off doing whatever she wants. That, I mean, obviously, it's not fair. He understands the situation, I would assume. I don't know. I don't know how if they say the age of these kids are, but
they all it says is that they are the same age.
Okay, so let's just say 10 years old. At that time, you know, she doesn't have to do anything, but he does. I mean, that. The son would have to be asking a lot of questions and feel resentful. So the father needs to step up and put similar kind of restraints on his kid. But something tells me that his situation is, you know, he divorced the kid's mom. Maybe to be with his current wife.
That is reckless speculation, sir.
Oh, of course it is. That's what we do on this show.
That's what you do on this show.
So maybe he has a kind of a guilt factor going on to where he feels like, you know, if I tell her to do the dishes, she'd be like, wait a minute. Why aren't you and mom together anymore? Oh, wait a minute. I would love to do these dishes or take the trash out, Dad, but weren't you messing around on mom?
I don't think that can't be a thing.
Oh, I didn't get the dishes clean enough? Oh, well, I guess you shouldn't have messed around on mom, you know. I'm over exaggerating quite a bit, but maybe there is a kind of a guilt thing going on with him.
I mean, perhaps, I don't know if it's necessarily quite the deep-seated issue that you think it is.
Sure.
But I can see there's probably an issue there. Like, he, I mean, what can you do, though? I mean, he parents his kid the way he's going to. Like, the fact that you've got to stick up your you-know-what with your kid does not necessarily mean that he's got to be the same way with his.
Well, I mean, it sounds like she's raising her kid to be, you know, to be responsible, probably a better student, and be a better member of society, where the husband is just raising somebody who's going to become an entitled brat.
My, we're just really getting, like, like, I know the whole point of this show is to get, you know, judgy with these people, but man, you're making it sound like this kid's just going to be living on the street by the time he's in his 20s.
No,
my
no, the, God, boy, the boy's going to be fine.
Oh, the other one, the daughter, like, she's going to be living in a gutter somewhere because she's not being taught to have any responsibility whatsoever. Maybe she's just being overly hard on her kid and doesn't seem to think there's a problem with that. Why do we assume that he's a problem? Because he's not, you know, treating his kid like, you know, he's about ready to send her off to, you know, boarding school or something.
Boarding school? Now you're on to something. No, I mean, we're taking the letter at face value. It sounds like she is limiting the screen time. I mean, what other parameters is she putting on her son? I can't remember. I just know that the screen time is a big thing. That's something we're battling at my house. It sounds like she's just being the parent. She's not trying to be the kid's friend. That's where a lot of people, that's where I got myself into some trouble with my stepkids. They don't want a friend. They want a dictator.
I guarantee you they don't want a dictator either, man.
No, exactly. That's extreme the other direction. But
this are you looking for like them to never want to be in your to spend their weekends with their other parent? Because that's how you get that.
That is a real threat, actually. But again, taking the letter at face value, it sounds like she's just saying, hey, you know, maybe your daughter could help out around here. Maybe, you know, kind of limit her screen time, maybe
get her to pick things up. I don't have a problem with her screen time.
You know, I'm just, that's just because
she listened
to that.
I know, but that's what I'm saying.
I'm
coming back with, like, I don't see any issue with the screen time she has. Why do I need to limit her screen time? Why, like, she's getting all her other whatever stuff she needs to do done.
But what if she's not, though? What if she's not helping out around the house? She's not cleaning up after herself? Maybe her grades are slipping? And I mean, these are all the what ifs.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, we don't know how she's approaching. It could have been my previous thought is maybe she, hey, you're good for nothing, daughter, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he's saying that, oh, you just hate my daughter. Maybe she's not coming across real nice.
Maybe she does hate his daughter. We don't know.
There's probably got to be some resentment there. Yeah, I mean, I'd be hard pressed to think that there wouldn't be any resentment. The fact that she's trying to instill these kind of values on her son, and across the hall, it's a daughter. It's the Wild West where she will definitely be under an overpass, cooking beans over a hobo fire.
Apparently you got to sit down and figure out how you're going to do this. Cause I mean, I don't know that it can necessarily work long-term with you doing things completely different ways between the two of you.
Right.
But I mean, there is going to be some resentment. Like, I don't see what the issue is with the way I'm raising my kid, and prepare for that to be like, kind of a problem. Yep. We got to hit a break. We'll come back and I guess we'll finally talk some football, cause we got the picks coming up next. Stick around. It's that time of the week. It's Friday. I've almost run out of time to do this bit once again, but it is time for the picks. And joining us, as always, live via satellite, Drew Duffney.
Hey, hey, hey.
And for the first time in studio all season, like every time we're getting ready to do this bit, all of a sudden, LaPure Main Street manager James Tiberius all has better things to do, I guess.
That's right.
Week 12, you know, no rush.
I'm putting my perfect record on the line.
Your perfect record of what? I have no idea.
Non-appearance.
I haven't lost a game.
You haven't won one either.
Details.
So we start this week with the 49ers head to Green Bay in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field to take on the Packers and hopefully, for their sake, get their season back on track here as they currently sit at 500 and a division that no one's really pulling away from. Drew Duffney on the pick.
Green Bay.
Jim.
Green Bay.
Adam.
Gotta go with Green Bay.
You know what? Just for the fun of it, San Francisco with the upset here. Up next, we got Monday Night Football to do. The Ravens head into Los Angeles to take on Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers. We start with Adam Harahuck on the pick.
Jim Harbaugh rewrote The Raven from Edgar Allan Poe, and it's so much better. A lot of curse words, but it is so much better. That being said, nevermore give me Baltimore.
True.
Yeah. No Edgar Allan Poe references for me. Give me the Chargers.
Jimothy.
Because I can't pick the Ravens, I'm taking the Chargers.
Why can't you pick the Ravens?
Because I just don't like the Ravens.
Oh.
He's a Steeler fan, remember?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I have no such
allegiance.
Anything precluding me from taking the Ravens in this matchup, because I want to win. Up next, the game we all really care about, your Detroit Football Lions. They're taking on the Colts in Indy. They're favored by 7.5. You know how it works. We need scores. Drew Duffney on the pick.
Definitely the Lions. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I'm going to say, is it going to get to 49? No, I'm not going to say 49. I'm going to say 42 to 17.
Jimothy.
I'm going to say Lions 31-14.
Adam Harahawk.
I think some of these injuries that they've had going on, I think it's going to snake bite them a little bit. I think they're going to be a little nervous. I think Colts are going to be a little bit more of a competition for them than anybody else thinks. Lions, 28. Colts, 25.
I think you're out of your mind for thinking this is going to be anywhere near that close, to be entirely honest with you.
I've almost got the last two games right, score-wise.
You undershot the Lions last week by about half. That being said, the Colts are middle of the pack offensively.
I had them scoring 80 points.
I think you only had them scoring 28 or something, didn't you?
No, it was. I don't know. We'll look at that off the air.
We'll get to it later. Yeah. The Colts offense is like mediocre, really, and the Lions are better defensively than about any team in the National Football League. Meanwhile, the Lions have the best running game, and the Colts really can't stop much anybody. I don't feel like there's really anything that makes this a particularly close matchup. Give me the Lions 34 and the Colts, I'm going to say, I'm going to say 17. Real quick, let's do a little bit of college while we have time, maybe.
Do we have to?
Yeah, I know, right? Indiana headed to Columbus to take on the Buckeyes. Adam on the pick.
You know what? I don't want the Buckeyes to win. Can I just say that?
But you have to actually pick a winner of the game.
So you're saying Indiana?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Drew Duffy on the pick.
So who's the Indiana team? I mean, we want to reference them by their
Hoosiers.
You know, proper name. Is it the Hoosiers?
Hoosiers. Yes.
All right. Yeah. Hoosiers are not going to be the losers. So give me the Hoosiers. Hi, Sean. Thanks, Sean.
That was terrible. Jimothy on the pick.
You know, as much as I would love to see Indiana win this one, give me Ohio State.
You know what? I will absolutely believe in the Hoosiers' ability to go in there and do this. I don't feel confident in that at all, but I am rooting for it to happen, and if I root hard enough, it has to happen, right? Give me Indy.
Yep.
Give me Indiana. All right, does anyone really think that one win Purdue is going to beat Michigan State tonight? Anybody? Anybody? Raise your hands.
Give me Michigan State. I'll take him.
And then Northwestern at U of M tomorrow. Does anyone think that Northwestern's beating the Wolverines?
Yes.
Also no?
Yes, I'll take Northwestern.
Oh, that's going to be hilarious when they actually do and keep Michigan from appearing in a bowl game.
Yeah. Right.
Well, there's your picks for whatever any of this might be worth. Like, maybe Michigan will actually, this is the game they need for bowl eligibility because you're not beating Ohio State next week.
Nope.
So that'll be something, I suppose. In the meantime, we do have a little bit of business to take care of, a little bit of housekeeping. If we could, Happy Hour would like to apologize to, in our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls, Derek Lalonde, Nick Wright, Hans Gruber, Sergey Fedorov, Jim Montgomery, the Columbus Indescribable Rage, the Boston Misappropriation, Kane Brown, baseball card collectors, Paul Skeens, and Pirates fans, we're sorry! And we gotta go. A full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Sessions. All being well, we will talk to you Monday afternoon at 3. See ya! Yeah.